Oh. All right. I hold on. I started the show and I didn't have the music connected. So here we go. I can't cut this part out, but we're still going to do the show the right way. So, let's see. Oh, no, we're not, because my microphone's not even connected. Zach, what did we do? What is this disaster?
This feels like a end of the season, no game next week. Kind of
We,
put our Hawaiian shirts on. We're flipping burgers, watching the conference championship game and
I, yeah,
games this weekend, like Dabo says.
I went and I flipped burgers instead of concentrating on the show. Here we go. Hello, folks, and welcome to the A to Z Sports Big Orange Podcast. I am Charlie Burris, here with my co-host and A to Z Sports writer, Zach Reagan. Wherever you listen throughout the world, we thank you so much for listening to us. Zach and I talk everything balls here on the Big Orange Podcast every week. And if you want to listen to that regularly, go over to the A to Z Sports Podcast Network feed on Apple, Spotify, and rate, review, and most importantly, subscribe, because when you subscribe, you won't miss the shows when we drop them on Mondays. And also on Mondays, there is the live stream that we are doing right now as we speak. And if you go over to YouTube.com, type in A to Z Sports Nashville, you'll find us there live streaming and all of the other videos that we post with everything. We've been doing interviews and all of this extra stuff. And you'll find it there. Subscribe to the A to Z Sports YouTube channel. Like the videos. Notification bells, all of that stuff. At Charlie underscore Burris, at Zach TNT, at A to Z Sports, Facebook.com/A to Z Sports Nashville, and A to Z Sports.com for all the stuff that we write on the old internet. See, we got the regular intro in there. That works. Corrected, made adjustments. Just like Tim Banks did with his defense this week. Let's get to it. The Tennessee Volunteers, with a good amount on the line. Let's say that some actual real pressure in this one to whatever extent, you know, the win over Vandy wouldn't have resulted in any kind of movement in rankings or anything really. But the pressure was that if you lose to Vandy. And they went out there and they destroyed Vandy 56-0, an unbelievable answer to the giant egg that was laid against South Carolina. Credit where it's due to everybody all the way around. As I said, I mean, Tim Banks, 63 points given up to South Carolina, zero against Vanderbilt. I don't know if in the history of college football, anybody has given up 60 points and then the next week given up zero to another team that's in the league that they play in. That would be kind of interesting. And I would guess that it's been done next to zero times, but Tennessee found a way to do it. Blasts Vanderbilt, and you watched it too, Zach. What's up, man?
Man, it's glad we're not here talking about a narrow win or even a loss, because opinions were all over the place going into that game, and understandably so, coming off that bad South Carolina game. Vanderbilt playing pretty well. I mean, before that South Carolina game, I think we would have put Vanderbilt and South Carolina in similar categories as far as how they had been playing. Those two teams played earlier this year, and it was, I think, South Carolina won by 10 or 11. It was a higher scoring game, 38-27, somewhere in there. So the fact that they shut down a Vanderbilt team that's not your typical Vandy team. I mean, they're building a program there. Clark Lee is doing a really good job. Almost had them bowl eligible. If it wouldn't have been for playing Alabama in their crossover game, perhaps they would have been bowl eligible this year. They would have got that sixth win. So Vandy had a lot to play for, and they wanted to go in there and make a statement, and they thought that they were going to catch a Tennessee team that was kind of limping down the stretch and was vulnerable, and Tennessee was focused. They came out with a plan. They wanted to score. They wanted to score fast. Josh Heupel came out, took the ball. Usually they defer. Part of that had to do with the weather, wanting as many possessions as possible in clearer weather before the rain really started coming down. So there was that was by design. For that, but they just wanted to go out and make a statement. I mean, you heard them say during the broadcast, Tom Hart said that Alex Golish said he wanted to test Vanderbilt's secondary early. And what was it, the second, third play of the game? Joe Milton throws it 60 yards to Jalin Hyatt, and they score in less than 55 seconds. So It was definitely the same Tennessee that we had seen leading up to the South Carolina game, absent the Georgia game, of course. That was Tennessee kind of back in the saddle there.
They really did it big, and it was such a relief in every way, because you just couldn't have even, realistically, I don't think you could have even had a close one here and not gotten criticized. That's just the nature of it, really. Because you look at, I don't want to take anything away from what Tennessee did at all. 56-0. I mean, what a crazy great performance. It was awesome. And the defense really stepped up, and the offense really stepped up, and credit all the way around. But you look at Vandy, and how did they beat Florida and Kentucky? Like, seriously, that quarterback couldn't throw beyond 10 yards. And it was clear he couldn't do that, and the coaches didn't trust him to do that. And their game plan from the jump was terrible. I mean, it played right into Tennessee's hands. I mean, the one thing that Tennessee defense has done pretty good all season is defend against the run, and Vandy did nothing but run it. And so, I mean, they just did exactly what Tennessee needed them to do, and Tennessee, to Tennessee's credit on that flip side, just crushed them for it, and rightfully so. And now they finish with 10 wins, and that's awesome. But, like, see how? What a terrible loss for Florida. And, you know, Kentucky's not great. But Florida, I think they have more talent than what happened this season. And that's egregious to lose to this team. Like, I don't know. This isn't going to be a show about Florida. But that just struck me watching that game. Like, I was like, Vandy won those games, but they still stink. Like, they're really just not good. And that's, regardless, that was just a thought that ran through my head during that game.
It feels like Florida, and not to get off on Florida too much, and I said it feels like they've regressed a bit this year. They have dealt with some injuries, had a bunch of wide receivers out this past weekend. But it doesn't feel like, even with that, it doesn't feel like they've improved. Like, the Florida we saw at the beginning of the year that beat Utah, that, you know, Tennessee – that game wasn't as close as the final score looked, but they made a run. Anthony Richardson made some things happen in that game that made it closer than it should have been. It feels like they just went the wrong direction. I wonder if all these years of Florida, you know, Tennessee kind of took the attention off of them because of how bad Tennessee was at times. Florida hasn't been that great over the last decade themselves, and they've went through a bunch of coaches as well. And you wonder if all that's starting to catch up to them a little bit. Be great timing for Tennessee, as Tennessee's kind of rising right now. Hopefully Florida kind of, maybe they go through a lull like Tennessee did.
Hopefully that would be great. I want to send Florida deep out into the desert so that they get a taste of what Tennessee's gone through. It needs to happen. I'll say this. We have a comment right here. Josh says, where do y'all think we will end up bowl-wise? So, this show today, we are absolutely going to talk about that some. I think that is a question that in some sense might be better answered on Wednesday after the rankings come out, but we'll still discuss it here and everything. The implications of Tennessee's now 10-win season and all that going forward. But first, we're going to talk about the Vandy game, go through that, and where Tennessee sits, what Joe Milton did. We'll talk about it all, but first, as always, I got to tell you about our amazing sponsor that keeps the show going, Superbook Sports. Can you beat Vegas this football season? Superbook Sports gives you the chance every week to go head-to-head with the best odds makers in Vegas. No fancy computer algorithms, no guys across the pond setting lines for American sports, just the best team of odds makers in the business behind the counter at Superbook in Las Vegas. Plus, Superbook features some of the best odds and promo bets anywhere, so download the Superbook Sports app or visit superbook.com and start your battle against Vegas right now. Visit superbook.com for terms and conditions. And if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-889-9789. That is Superbook Sports. And the odds coming into that Vandy game for Tennessee, I think Tennessee was a 14-point favorite. They covered that by, 36 or 34 points? Not bad. Yeah. So in this game, with Vandy, as we said, there was pressure on Tennessee in a real way. Joe Milton playing quarterback with Hendon Hooker out for the rest of the season. You had Brew McCoy out. Ultimately, they didn't say Brew McCoy was out, but ultimately he never played. Cedric Tillman out. Half of your defense I think so. I saw somebody say it was close to 10 starters out in this game. Denico Slaughter, Brandon Turnage, Trey Flowers.
Trayvon Flowers.
I mean, the list just went on and on and on and on and on. And you look, and yeah, as I said before that ad read, I mean, Vandy stinks. Don't make no bones about that. But still, with that many players out and a backup quarterback and all of this stuff, the rain, oh, it was terrible. It was cold. It was rainy. It just was abysmal all the way around. And I had an ominous feeling coming into the game. Like, I was just like, this doesn't feel right. Not that there's just so many players out. I feel like something funky is going to happen. And Josh Heupel clearly wasn't feeling that way. Like we were. And they went out and dropped a bomb right off the bat, as you mentioned there. And it was just really impressive from beginning to end, specifically on the ground. I mean, the running game was absurdly good, almost 400 yards of production on the ground. And that was Joe Milton never running that entire game. They clearly had been like, we got to protect your body. You're the guy going forward, so we're not going to have you out there running tonight. And they said no to that. And even still, almost 400 yards on the ground. It was really absurd. But to turn to Milton, because I think that's, in this game, what a lot of people want to talk about. Your thoughts on how he played in that game?
Well, it's really hard to evaluate him 100% because of the weather. I mean, you had the rain, and that definitely impacted the passing game. But we still saw flashes of the inconsistency with Milton. And look, I'm not going to lie. I'm concerned about it going into next season, because Milton, I mean, if you go ask a Michigan fan, the comments that Tennessee fans make about Joe Milton is the same thing that Michigan fans were saying for when he was in Ann Arbor. If he can ever figure it out, he could be the number one pick in the NFL draft. Like, he has that kind of upside as far as just the physical ability, the talent. He made the right read. I mean, he made a lot of the right reads. He was going in the right place with the ball, yeah. But he was just off several times. There was Princeton Fant in the seam. I mean, the ball's kind of 3 feet away from Fant. I thought Fant probably could have laid out maybe and made like a Ramel Keaton type catch, or at least tried to. But even then, that ball, if he hits him in stride, he probably scores. You had several other throws like that. The throw to Squirrel White when he was 7 yards away, he threw it about 110 miles an hour. I mean, you don't need to do that. And it's been a struggle of his for so long now that you have to assume that that's just kind of who he is. His career completion percentage is around 57%. And that's not in, you know, the same amount of snaps as Hendon Hooker's had the last 2 years. But it's a pretty good sample size dating back to his time at Michigan. And I think it's just who he is. I mean, when we've seen inaccurate quarterbacks before, they never really develop into a guy that's going to just be on the money all the time. I mean, we've even seen Hooker be inaccurate at times. He's had some games where he's been off. But with Milton, it seems like every game you have those missed opportunities. You can get by with that against Vanderbilt. You can get by with that against Bowling Green, like the season opener last year. You can get by in those games. But when you go play Alabama, I mean, that's why Hendon Hooker and Tennessee beat Alabama. He didn't miss those in that game. I mean, he hit Jalen Hyatt every time Hyatt was open. You have to do that to win that game. And if you're going to beat Georgia, if you're going to continue to beat Florida and some of these upper echelon SEC teams, you can't miss those throws. And I think it's a concern going into next season. I don't think we can assume that he's just got it figured out or he's going to figure it out. Josh Heupel and Joey Hosley, Alex Golish, there's only so much they can do working with his mechanics and his base and his timing and all of that. Ultimately, it's up to him and his abilities and what he can do. And I don't know that he can be a 65% completion guy.
There's a few points to be made about Milton, and some folks are talking in the comments here. Fanatic says, rain slows down receivers. He is 80% plus on throws over 20 yards coming in. That's
a strength for sure.
I think it was like 89%. Like, just crazy how good he had been on those bomb throws. And Fanatic says, just wonder if it was nerves and weather that threw him off. I think that's a fair point. I think it is very important to say we have legitimately never seen this dude play a full game with the full playbook against an actual opponent. I mean, we've seen him play. Who was the opening game last year?
Bowling Green, and then Pitt was the next game.
Yeah, and then he's injured, and he's done, and is Hooker from there. And so I'm interested if Tennessee gets to the bowl game and it's Clemson in the Orange Bowl and it's real competition and if it's the Orange Bowl, it'd be Miami. The chance of that being good, clear weather is pretty high. And I just want to see this guy work with everything, all the tools, and see what he does and kind of judge from there. Cause this, I just can't make judgments off of this game. Obviously those coaches see him day in and day out all the time. But I mean, here's the truth. And John Watts says this in the comments. He says, Milton only has a fastball. Milton does strike me like a Ben Joyce of sorts. Ben Joyce, the pitcher for Tennessee baseball last season, who essentially, he also only had a fastball. It was a great fastball. He was considered one of the best pitchers in America all year. But he only had a fastball, effectively. And we were kind of like, well, if he could really get finesse down, I mean, he's going to be an absolute killer in the big leagues, and hopefully he does that, and I'm rooting for him for sure. But it's the same thing with Milton here. The physical talent is unbelievable. He only has fastball at the moment. And I will say this. I do think he's gotten better because I think a strength of his is legitimately passing to the middle of the field. He rockets the ball in there, but a 15-yard crossing route, he's like pretty good getting the ball there. Now, the receiver has to be ready, and the receiver is going to have bruises on their hands after they catch the ball, but he gets it there, and he gets it there accurately. He gets it there accurately at the 5-yard throws, but I'm sure to those receivers, it's like catching a cement brick. And so, yeah, you got to get him thinking a little more finesse, but he threw a mid-range touchdown to Walker Merrill in that game, in the rain, in the grossness, and he still did it. And he can hit those throws. So I want to see how he played his strengths more like that, because it just seemed like all they did was just bomb, 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 bomb. Like that was all they were doing. And his best throw of the entire game got dropped. It was that throw to Keaton on the sideline, an absolute dime, and Keaton dropped it. I take that whole game with a grain of salt, and hopefully Tennessee gets a real opponent. I mean, God forbid they fall to the Cotton Bowl. What a nightmare that would be, having to play Toledo. Not Toledo. Who would it be? Tulane or whatever.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Please, yeah, it seems like that's close to out of the question at this point.
I think Texas A&M took care of that.
Yes, but thank goodness. Bless them. Thank you, Jimbo. Get real competition, open up the playbook, let this man play football. And I want to see what he does. And then I think that's where the real conversation for next season can really start. But just to me, because yeah, if I'm going to judge him harshly off that game, it was the same stuff that he's done before. And I don't like how that looks. Now I do wonder, Cedrin here, he says they're upgrading in the offseason. I think maybe they might. And the transfer portal is going to be nutty, but I you've already heard kind of the rumor that like Alabama might go after Drake May at North Carolina and some stuff. If Tennessee's got to play that game, they got to play that game. But you have the number two quarterback in America coming in this season, who's a bona fide, unanimous five-star, tons of talent. But he's, good luck doing a true freshman out there in SEC football. Like that just works out so rarely. So you got to figure it out. And So I want to see Milton play a real game before I sail him down the river. I'll just put it that way.
I agree. I mean, you're right. They do need a bigger sample size because we really haven't seen him in a tough SEC game, and to see how he reacts to that type of environment. Hopefully we do get a bowl game that's competitive, that a lot of guys haven't opted out of either side, because yeah, you want that 11th win, but if Milton's going to be the guy, that could be a very important game as far as his development goes. So if it is Clemson, if you end up playing Kansas State, whoever it ends up being, you hope it is a game where Milton's kind of got to face a little bit of adversity and figure some things out. And then that way you kind of know that he's battle tested and he can handle it next season. I don't worry as much about the quarterback deal just because Josh Heupel has proved to be, I mean, look at Hendon Hooker. I mean, he was an afterthought when he came to Tennessee. Nobody could have predicted his rise. Nobody would have ever thought that he'd be a Heisman candidate and potentially on the stage in New York next month. So he has the great track record of developing quarterbacks. So whether it's Milton, Maybe it's Taven Jackson. We haven't really got to see him in an extended action either, especially since he got hurt in the UT Martin game. And then you've got Nico coming in, who's the wild card there. You never really advocate for a true freshman to start, but we have seen it before, and we've seen it work. We saw it with Trevor Lawrence, who was didn't get the job immediately at Clemson. They went with Kelly Bryant at first that year, but he eventually did win the job. I could see that being the scenario with Tennessee, where Joe Milton maybe is your Kelly Bryant, and then Nico ends up being your Trevor Lawrence. So there's a lot of different possibilities. And then the portal route has been mentioned. I mean, that's very possible too, because look, Brian Kelly did it at LSU when he came into Baton Rouge this past offseason. They had Miles Brennan, who is a fifth or sixth year senior, feels like he'd been there forever, who had played well before injuries in 2020. You had Garrett Nussmeier, Walker Howard, five-star true freshman. He had options, and he still went and got Jaden Daniels from Arizona State, and that ended up being his guy. And take away the Texas A&M game, and it looked like LSU was moving in the right direction with Daniels, and like that was the right decision. I still think it probably was the right decision, but we've seen it before with SEC programs, so I definitely wouldn't rule out Tennessee looking for a quarterback. And there should be plenty of options, because there's already some guys hitting the portal. There's lots of rumors of guys that are going to hit the portal. And if you're a quarterback and you've got 1 year left and you think you got a shot to start at Tennessee, why would you not go to Tennessee? You're almost, if you go and you get the starting job, you're almost guaranteed to get a shot in the NFL. Maybe you won't be a high draft pick, but you're going to get a shot.
Absolutely. It's just going to be a test of time here. I mean, we just have to see how it plays out, because when that transfer portal opens up this time, I think this is probably going to be the wildest the transfer portal will ever be. Just a prediction, but you just have the beginning, you know, NIL still extremely fresh, and still the transfer portal. I mean, we've done it for a little while now, but still a pretty fresh concept where players are really feeling like, oh, well, I can get a better opportunity somewhere else. I mean, you already saw guys, the transfer portal technically hasn't opened up yet, but you've seen some guys declare, I'm going in. Awesome offensive lineman from Alabama today. Somebody even said it in the comments right here. Wide receiver. Yeah. Rekt says Missouri, Dominic, love it. A Missouri wide receiver is going into the portal too. So I think it's going to be pretty wild. And
if you're a wide receiver, I mean, Tennessee should have their pick.
Oh yeah.
Wide receivers. I mean,
man,
Brew McCoy revitalizes his career and has really been such an underrated player for Tennessee. He hasn't had those splash plays that Jalin Hyatt had this year or Cedric Tillman had last year. But every time they've needed like a conversion, those intermediate routes, he's been there. He's been physical. He's made the catch. He's broken tackles to get first downs. I mean, he's been a really underrated player, I feel like. And then you just look at Tillman, what he did before Josh Heupel arrived, Jalin Hyatt, the way he's emerged this year, Ramel Keaton, who people forget, I think, how he's an upperclassman. He's been around for a while and hadn't really done much. And Tillman goes down, he steps up, plays a huge role for Tennessee. He's become kind of a go-to guy, and he's another one kind of like McCoy. It'll be 3rd and 10, and there's Ramel Keaton in the middle of the field to make the catch and keep the drive going. So he's been a very important player. So if you're a wide receiver, I mean, I'd get it if you go to Ohio State, but Tennessee's going to be right there in the mix for those guys.
I want to see a big splash this offseason too. Like, dude, this is a real hopeful one, but Boomhauer in the comments says, I hope Dallin Hayden hits the transfer portal. Dallin Hayden, of course, at Ohio State, a running back who really emerged in the last couple of weeks, had some really nice performances for Ohio State, and he's also the son of Aaron Hayden, who was a running back for Tennessee and a very prominent one at that back in his day. Man, that would be so great. And Aaron Hayden's such a big Tennessee fan. I mean, obviously went there, but he very much advocates for the University of Tennessee, but he's never pushed his kids. Neither of his kids went to Tennessee. One went to Oklahoma State, and then the other went to Ohio State. They are both phenomenal athletes. Oh, man, that would be sweet. But something like that would be great, where I think going into this next season, obviously, I think more than the running back position, that would be cool. That, I mean, Lord knows he would be incredible in this offense, but something on defense, like a really great pickup on defense, specifically at cornerback.
Yes, to shut down any corner. There has to be a corner that went to a non-power five school that should have. There, I mean, there's got to be several of those guys. Yeah. And yes, just with Jason, all these coaching changes, Surely.
Jason says the cornerback from Cincinnati, Luke Fickell, going to Wisconsin. So Lord knows some kids are going to transfer out of there. Luke Fickell obviously built his entire reputation at Cincinnati on that defense. That's how they got to the playoff last year. There's got to be one there. Come on down. You're just right up the road. Just drive right past Lexington, Kentucky. Come down 75. You're right there in Knoxville. But hopefully that happens. And to everybody who's commenting there too, we're going to talk about Hugh Freeze in a second. Hugh Freeze just literally as we came on here got announced as the new coach at Auburn. An interesting pickup there. It's just a little beside the point at the moment. We will talk about that. So I think there's going to be plenty of movement this offseason, because you just have to imagine, if you're Josh Heupel, you realize the potential here. You realize what you're working with resource-wise, money-wise, in terms of how this program, I think, is now viewed. You put 10 wins up in a regular season, and you got to think that the perception of this program to recruits suddenly changes. You flipped it on a dime, where it was, oh, well, they're up and coming, to, oh, they're a top 10 team. Like, you flipped that perception, I think, and you got to be in the mode of taking advantage of that. And I think he is. And so I think they'll go hard into the transfer portal. And you know, like Rekt says, I think Haynes King will transfer from Texas A&M, maybe something like that. Texas A&M, you know, hello, who was it? Walter Nolan. Hello, somebody. Come on back home, my guy. we need you.
Now, here's the thing with that is, I wonder, with these NIL deals that players presumably accepted to go to a program, for example, at Texas A&M, if that happened, what are the terms on those deals? I mean, do you have contracts that you sign under the table where you forfeit some money back? Is there some sort of legal agreement there that you have to stay so long? I mean, obviously none of that's done above board, because that's kind of not pay for play, and that's not how this whole thing is supposed to work. But obviously a lot of that stuff's happening. So how locked in are some of these players to their current schools, especially SEC programs? Because if it's a group of five school, a lower tier power five program, you see that maybe not being as big of an issue. But if it's A&M or some of these programs that have been rumored to give out these huge NIL deals for these recruiting classes, do you have to stick around to get paid? Get to pay money back if you leave? Like, that could get real messy, I feel like.
Absolutely. And honestly, that's why I think the transfer portal will be the wildest it will ever be this offseason. NIL is not under control yet. And by under control, I mean just market forces haven't equalized things. I think there's a lot of players out there thinking their value is massive and they're going to get hit with reality. I think there's some players out there that don't know their value and are probably going to undersell themselves. Like, there's a lot of that going on. And obviously in the transfer portal, I mean, dudes from like a Cincinnati, as we were saying, like, they're going to be like gold right now. And it's going to be a little bit of free agency, and think about that, whatever you want. That's future college football. And that,
I will say one thing with the NIL deals that benefits Tennessee is you've got two different NIL deals. Basically, you've got an NIL deal that you're using to bring a recruit to your program where you really don't know what they're going to do, or a transfer, or to get a guy to stay. And everybody on every team seemingly has some sort of NIL deal, it seems like, to some extent. Then you've got NIL deals that are legitimate, stuff like Jalin Hyatt, what he's doing, like the Bose deal with Mike Wright at Vanderbilt. Jalin Hyatt has become a household name because he's at Tennessee. And if you look at his numbers, not to diminish what Jalin Hyatt has done this year, but they're not Jamar Chase at LSU numbers. They're not Justin Jefferson at LSU numbers. They're not Devontae Smith numbers or Jameson Williams numbers. I mean, they're good numbers. If he plays in the bowl game, he'll break the Tennessee single season record. It's going to be about 1,300 yards, which is a season that's pretty typical of a first-round wide receiver that goes in the NFL draft. It's nothing exceptionally special. But because he did it at Tennessee, and the way this fan base is, he's become this household name that is getting these deals, that is getting all kinds of attention. And he's had a great year, of course, but I feel like players have to see that. You come to Tennessee, same goes for Hendon Hooker. You come to Tennessee and your options for NIL deals are going to open up so much, and you're going to get so much attention put on you just because you're going to be it's like being a pro athlete in East Tennessee or the whole state, really. So I think the opportunities at Tennessee are legitimately better than they are at a lot of other programs. And I think that'll be just as appealing because that's where you can get into some real serious money, not just, I mean, I don't know what these NIL deals are going for as far as bringing a player in, but when you get into that stuff, that's kind of independent of the program and boosters and stuff, that's serious money then.
Yeah. I mean, you just look between schools. Everybody said that about Kiffin with Ole Miss, where they were like, oh, he wants to leave because of NIL. I think rightfully so. Like, Knoxville has the CEO, well, whoever is the head of Pilot at this point, the guy that created Pilot is a giant donor. I think what Dish Network too is a giant donor to Tennessee. Garmin's navigation systems is a Tennessee alum too. So like you have just at Tennessee, some things like that. It's in one of the biggest cities in the SEC. If not the biggest outside of Nashville, actually, I would probably be the case. And you know, does Nashville even count since Vandy's the team that's there? And do you almost count Nashville as a part of what Tennessee takes? You know,
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I really do. And so, yeah, you have a lot of that, like working in your favor here. And it is what it is. Like at Auburn compared to an Ole Miss, Auburn has what the CEO of Apple is an Auburn alum. You know, there's things like that, or it's an alum, or he's went there. Either way, he is Tim. What's his face? Is right? Am I making that up?
I don't know if you are or not, to be honest. So
let's see.
I was just gonna step back and see where that went.
Tim Cook from Mobile, Alabama, and let's see. Auburn University, the bachelor's degree.
Yeah, you nailed it. And, yeah.
And then he went to Duke. So, it makes a real difference in a situation like this. Seriously, like the money that Tennessee can shell out is a lot bigger than Mississippi State, is what it is. So, moving forward, I guess a couple of recruiting tidbits to throw into. David Hobbs officially committed to Tennessee since last time we recorded. That's huge. 5-star defensive lineman. That's amazing. I think speaks to how well the season went. Because I think if you have a crap season, David Hobbs doesn't come in here. You got him over Alabama and Georgia, and they did an awesome job locking that down because they got him on great visits. I think he visited for the Alabama game and the Florida game. Like that could not have gone better in their favor. And so an excellent pickup there. And just continue that momentum into the early signing period here, into the actual old signing period in February. And I think this is going to be a close to a top 10 class, if not a top 10 class. And then you build off of that with the transfer portal. And sky's the limit, I think, with Tennessee moving forward to get, you know, that's sort of off-season content. But right now, the iron is hot and Tennessee needs to strike. And I think so far they're doing a decent job of that.
Yeah, that's why that Vanderbilt game was so important to finish the season the right way, because you don't want the taste in your mouth to be that South Carolina game going into the offseason. It would have a lot of 2016 vibes where you're losing your star quarterback and you have a couple of tough losses at the end of the season. Not that I think Josh Heupel would have imploded like Butch Jones did in 2017 by any means, but it would have been kind of that same feeling going into 2023 is like, what a missed opportunity. Now you got to start over with a new quarterback. Can you get back there? So you beat Vanderbilt, you kind of erased a lot of those questions. You erased the locker room questions. We haven't even brought that up. I mean, that was the theme of the week last week. Was there's fighting in the locker room. Kirk Herbstreit goes on ESPN and tells everybody they're fighting in Knoxville. It's not good. And it turned out that he's just using what he's seen on social media, message boards, because there really wasn't much truth to it. I mean, ultimately, Jeremy Banks missed that game, we think, because he missed a practice early in the week. And that, I mean, Banks comes from his own admission and a tweet that he since deleted. And then we know that there was a little bit of a squabble between him and Hendon Hooker in the locker room, but it was nothing that really even was worth talking about outside of the program. And somebody said something to a player or a player's friend, and then, you know, how rumors spread. And by the time it gets to the message boards and Twitter, it's this huge ordeal. And then that makes its way to ESPN, and suddenly this whole narrative has been created out of thin air, mostly because they played so bad against South Carolina, which ultimately it looks like it was just a bad night, an off night, bad defensive play calls from Tim Banks, bad execution, didn't have your middle linebacker out there. It was just a perfect storm for a really bad night in Columbia. And then you saw Josh Heupel kind of come out three different times and push back against the culture stuff hard. He did it in the post-game interview with Colt Kubelik on SEC Network. He did it in his press conference, and he did it during his coach's show. In his coach's show, he specifically mentioned people in the media, and locally it wasn't really that big of a deal. I think most people just kind of talked about it a little bit here and there. It was really Herb Street's comments that made that go crazy, and you could feel some pettiness from Heupel. He didn't care for that, and he made sure to kind of protect his players because he didn't go out and get super defensive. He just said, hey, those guys don't understand what these players are about. And that was really all need to be said. You say that, you put up 56, give up zero, and it kind of erases those questions.
We've speculated all season at different points. Like, is Josh Heupel the vindictive dude secretly? Because he has a great disposition in press conferences and interviews. Comes off like just a guy, and it's awesome. I think behind the scenes, he doesn't play that. I don't think that he's a Jeremy Pruitt or anything like that, where you're just screaming at everybody and doing all of those things. But I think he's made it very apparent that he does not forget. He's extremely competitive. Oh, yeah, this is perfect. Ben says, you know, he keeps receipts. Exactly.
Yep.
You know, he keeps receipts. He's got that Rolodex in his mind. Yeah, he's heard what
he's not out there. He's not out there talking junk before the games either. No. He's not out there in the media stirring things up like some of Tennessee's opponents did this season. He just takes it, remembers it, keeps those receipts, and then that's, you know, he beats you on game day, and that's that. You know, he'll kind of have a little comment after, and he did it after Kentucky when he talked about the real football stuff, just kind of in his own way, mentioning it casually that a lot of people maybe at the time didn't even pick up on. But I definitely think that Petty's there, and I think we probably knew that when he got hired. If we would have dug into his past as far as the Oklahoma stuff, he has never went back to Oklahoma. He's kind of disassociated himself with the program, doesn't really talk about it a whole lot. And somebody brought it up to me on Twitter yesterday or Saturday at some point. That's probably the reason people should not worry about him going back to Oklahoma, is because of that pettiness, because he doesn't forget and because he keeps those receipts. I think he'd rather go beat Oklahoma than go coach at Oklahoma.
Exactly. And I think it's awesome. And I think it's one of the things that ultimately in his time here is going to give him that winning edge. Cause it's quiet confidence, but it's confidence. He's incredibly competitive. And I think that's what doesn't present itself in a press conference, and really how I would frame it. It's probably not vindictive per se, but I'm going to guess that he has that South Carolina game next year circled, and he's going to say, never again. We're not going to have that happen. And you know, it's things like that where Butch went out there and would lose embarrassingly like that, and then go, well, we won 9 games this year. Don't you know that that's the best season since blah, blah, blah? And Josh Heupel goes, well, that was terrible. We're going to go beat South Carolina the next time we get the chance to, even though we blew it. And I think that's sort of the difference that hopefully keeps him having good teams going forward. Obviously, we'll have to see how that goes. But as far as this Vandy game goes and anything else concerning that, there's a few other things I wanted to move on to, but anything else, Zach, that sort of happened over the weekend or might happen soon that you want to address?
I think the one thing I want to mention about the Vandy game is my favorite thing from that game was just watching Dylan Sampson and the improvements that he's made this season and the way that he has progressed, because that LSU game, he missed that block, got Hendon Hooker blown up, and we didn't really see him for a while after that. And he kept working. Jerry Mack, running backs coach at Tennessee, talked about it throughout the season. He said he was embarrassed by it, and he's never going to let it happen again. Like, he's committed to it. And we saw him make a couple of incredible blitz pickups in this game against Vanderbilt. One of them was on a fourth down where if he doesn't come over and pick up that block, that blitzer, I mean, Milton gets blown up. And that, yeah. I believe the game was 7-0 still at that point. So it was still early on in the game where Tennessee hadn't really taken control yet. They end up scoring, taking a 14-0 lead. I think that was where Princeton Fant had to battle his way into the end zone there on third or fourth down, I believe. But that was a huge play in the game. And to see his development, it shows the way this staff develops players. They've gotten better as the years progress. And the running game was, I mean, that was the explosive plays against Vanderbilt. You had a couple of 80-yard runs. Jabari Small had a 52-yard run. So it was really nice to see that ground game get going and break open some of those explosive plays against Vanderbilt.
Absolutely. The way he trucked that guy, I about leapt up off my couch. That was so awesome. I hope that he kind of becomes maybe next year's Jalen Hyatt, where you were like, okay, he hit that low point, he got his butt set on the bench, and then he used that as fuel. And I think you're seeing the proof of that, and that's awesome. I do love this.
Oh, speaking of running backs, did you go ahead with your comment?
Well, yeah, I was just to finish that Josh Heupel conversation. Paul says, and I just like this, Heupel looks like an old storekeeper. Just jot that down. We'll settle up later. That's a great description.
That is. I like that.
Yeah.
Now, have you ever seen a stat line as crazy as Jalen Wright's on Saturday night?
Five
carries for 160 yards, 32 yards a carry. That's
wild.
I've never seen anything like that.
I saw somebody said that it was like that Randy Moss Thanksgiving game. Like it was just cartoon numbers. Because it was just all huge plays. It was great. So on the ground, that game could not have gone better, frankly. I mean, it was absolutely flawless. It did feel like a little bit. Heupel played it well, and he got out to a 21-point lead. D. Williams with that awesome kick return. We didn't even mention that. It was awesome, awesome, awesome play by D. Williams. It seemed like from there, Vandy was sort of like, yeah, we're not winning this game. And they sort of phoned it in a little bit after that. But again,
they had a weird game plan. They didn't really try to exploit any of Tennessee's weaknesses. If you're going to start Mike Wright, who's not a great passer, but he does damage on the ground, I mean, he ran 8 times for 50 yards. And it felt like most of those runs came when Vandy was already down by 21, 28 points. They didn't really try to exploit that early in the game, especially with the weather. You would have thought that that's what they would have done. And even with the passing game, if you bring AJ Swan in, you would think they would test Tennessee's secondary the week after South Carolina a little bit more. So it was I like Clark Lee. I think he's done a really good job. And I think Vanderbilt felt the pressure of trying to get to bowl eligibility. I think Vandy would have actually been a more dangerous team if they would have just been a 4-win team going into that game, because they would have played like they had nothing to lose from the beginning.
I kind of agree, because I think they got down 21-0 and they were like, yeah, this one's over. We tried. Yeah, we got those two great wins, and you know, this one is no more. And then Tennessee just buried them from there. So, hey, but Tennessee had to go out there and bury him, and they did exactly that. So
did D. Williams get you with that celebration? Did you think he was hurt?
Yeah, I saw somebody mention it in the comments there. So I was watching it with the whole family, and I definitely, when he just initially did it, I was like, oh, you know, but my mom and my mother-in-law were also there, and they're like, is he hurt, like they were very concerned. It was pretty funny.
I've seen that celebration before, and the Mississippi, I don't know if you watched I know we were texting during the Egg Bowl on Thursday night, that Mississippi State receiver, he pulled up with like a hamstring or some leg issue after he caught a touchdown, and initially I thought that was part of his celebration. So when he went down, I was like, oh, okay. So when D. Williams did it, that was still in my mind. And I had the old crap moment as well.
Yeah, I know. I saw exactly what you're talking about. It definitely happens sometimes where it's just like you were just running too hard or something. You took a weird step and you can have that happen to you. But yeah, thankfully he's all good. And it was an awesome play. So there's sort of the talk about the Vandy game. We do have to mention, we would be very remiss if we did not bring up the basketball volunteers going out to the Battle for Atlantis and sticking it to Kansas. That was an awesome, awesome game. And I don't know how many people saw it. It seemed like more people saw it after the fact than actually watched it at the time, but that's okay. Tennessee, you're still in football mode. It's forgivable. It was Thanksgiving. Everybody's with their family. That was such a great recovery from that Colorado game. They go, and honestly, they beat Butler and they beat USC. USC pushed them harder than Kansas did. I think that Colorado game, I don't want to say it was good. It certainly was not good. It was horrendous. But I think it made Tennessee dig deeper into what their identity is, because since that game where they just chucked up a ton of threes and had no answer inside against Kansas, they had answers inside. I think Julian Phillips, the more that he develops, is going to be an absolute dude. Tyreek Key keeps coming around and is scoring for you. But the real thing that's going to carry this team is Vescovi and Ziegler playing well. And that's what happened against Kansas. The entire team played unbelievable defense, just absolutely fantastic defense from beginning to end. They held Kansas to, I think it was their worst offensive numbers in a game since 2014 or something. Like, just crazy defense Tennessee played. But then on the offensive side of the ball, you can play great defense. Tennessee's played great defense all season long, but they turned around. Vescovi made a ton of shots. Ziegler played great. He didn't turn the ball over like he has in other games. They were really crisp and effective. And, it was impressive. And as I said, we would be very remiss to not mention it, but did you have any thoughts on a basketball game?
Yeah, it's winning those games in November, I feel like, is so huge because it gives you so much confidence moving forward in the season. And then the fact is Kansas, I mean, they'd won, 17 games in a row? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of shaking up in college basketball happened this weekend. Tennessee moves up to number 13, and then UNC, that's number one, falls all the way down to number 18. Makes you feel like Tennessee's going to be one of the better basketball teams in the country this year, because I watched a decent amount of basketball this weekend, and there was just a lot of teams that you thought were going to be pretty good that looked really bad. I mean, UNC against, I mean, maybe Alabama is going to be in that same category as well after they beat UNC, but between Kansas and Gonzaga, and it made me feel a lot more optimistic about this season moving forward, thinking that, like, hey, maybe this could be the year that Barnes gets it all together and they go into March and make some noise, because you win a game like this early in the year, you think you're only going to get better from here, right? I mean, that's kind of the hope. When you lose a game in November, that's the excuse. Like I said about the Colorado game, you know, it's early. We don't worry about those too much because you get better as the season goes along. So hopefully this is a really good sign that, hey, Tennessee's fixing to jump into the top 10, top five, and be a force all season long.
Yeah, I hope so. Nugs asks, are we moving away from football and on to basketball? We're going to go back to football in just a second, but I wanted to drop in basketball here because it was just a really impressive performance. And yeah, completely agree. They just got a build. I think that team is going to go as Vescovi and Julian Phillips go. Like, they're the moving force, and Ziegler has to play clean, I think, for the rest of the season. It seems like his best spot is off the bench across the board. But if he can come in and play good, clean, effective minutes, he was clutch in that game, hit a big three down the stretch against
Kansas.
And that's
who he's supposed to be. I mean, that's what he's at Tennessee for. He wasn't there to be the guy. I mean, this is the role that he's kind of expected to play, you would think.
What? How did we get Jerick Arantano talk over here?
Whoa.
Rex says Jerick Arantano would drop dimes when he was good. And then John Hill says JG was all vol, though. That's true. I always said that about JG. He was freaking tough as nails. He just wasn't very good.
Not to get all, I mean, you don't want to get into JG talk too much.
Yeah, not really.
Since he's left the program, I think you realize, hey, Pruitt and that offense, there was nobody that was going to be successful in that offense. That offense was completely dreadful. And, you know, JG got hurt at Washington State, so we never really got to see what he could do there. But he got a chance in the NFL, so he's got some talent that NFL players or NFL coaches and personnel see. The dude was tough. He stayed a lot of years when he could have left. So, you know, it didn't go well for him, but I think he went through a lot of adversity, dealt with a lot of stuff while he was at Tennessee. And yeah, I don't have any ill will towards him at all.
No ill will. Wish him the best. Good luck. Drop in now and say, so for everybody wanting to know about bowl talk, I can say essentially the predictions that have come out for Tennessee football and their bowl game going forward, obviously 10-2 season, and LSU loses. And now I don't want to say you're locked into the Orange Bowl, but it's very, very likely. Although the outlying factor is that in a technical sense, the committee, the College Football Playoff Committee, could move Tennessee ahead of Alabama. I think there's a real argument to be made there that they should. And in fact, I think they should. Tennessee's resume is superior to Alabama's, and I'm not really sure how that's debatable at all. Their argument is, well, we lost less bad than you. And Tennessee says, well, we beat you. You know, and they have the same record, and Tennessee is the number two team in the SEC, and Alabama is the number four team in the SEC, and Tennessee beat a team that Alabama also lost to by 27 points. So it's really not even an argument, in my personal opinion. So that is still a rogue element here. And on that note, really, I just want to say the Orange Bowl is the most likely thing, but myself, Zach Reagan, and Austin Stanley of A to Z Sports, the founder of A to Z Sports, who is also a Tennessee alum and fan, is going to jump on here with us on Wednesday, and we're going to have it out after the College Football Playoff rankings are dropped on Tuesday night. And we're going to discuss everything about where Tennessee might end up, the things that could throw, because it could get nutty this weekend and things could change. Not saying Tennessee can make it to the playoff. I think that is very close to an impossibility at this point, unfortunately, but some nuttiness could happen. And so on Wednesday with Austin Stanley, we're going to have that conversation about the playoff rankings that come out now that Tennessee's finished 10-2.
You know, it's going to be infuriating if this happens. If things get so crazy this weekend that Michigan loses in the Big Ten championship game and TCU loses the Big 12 championship game and USC loses, there's several things that have to happen. Michigan with one loss because they beat Ohio State would probably still get in right now, so. You would think. But that means that terrible call at the end of the Illinois game where the Michigan receivers were just blocking downfield for as long as they wanted, and that's why Illinois lost that game. That would be kind of what keeps Tennessee out. Potentially could be one thing that keeps Tennessee out of the playoff. I mean, what more Tennessee luck could there be than that? And if not Tennessee, it'll keep somebody out of the playoff. It might not be Tennessee. Somebody. It might be Alabama. It might be...
There is also the chance, and I think this is probably the more likely outcome, is that it honestly wouldn't have mattered. Tennessee probably would have missed the playoff anyway, because if USC wins and TCU wins, it doesn't matter. And Michigan, of course. If they all three win, Tennessee wouldn't have made it anyway.
Yeah, that South Carolina game might have saved a massive meltdown in Knoxville. I would have been furious if USC made it in over Tennessee, because we know, you know, Tennessee had been the better team outside of that South Carolina loss. So if they would have made it in, obviously we know how the TCU conversation has gone the past several weeks. That would have been hard to accept, knowing that Tennessee lost one game and still didn't get in. So the South Carolina game might have saved us from some disappointment there.
Maybe. Obviously, that
I'd still rather have a shot and find out, though. I would,
yeah, that's true. But
there really are no silver linings to that South Carolina game.
But still, well, the silver lining is this: the best regular season Tennessee has had since 2003, so in 20 years. And that is what happened. And so, to finish here, I just wanted to throw in a fun segment because I don't want to get bogged down in that South Carolina game. 10-2, you finish on a 60-point win over Vandy, that was a ton of fun. And it's the best season since 2003. To you, Zach, what are the top three moments from this season, this regular season? There might be another one if Tennessee gets to play Clemson in this bowl game. But from this regular season, what do you think? Because I had a hard time. I was thinking about it all day, knowing that I would sort of spring this on you. But it's tough because there was a lot. And everybody in the comments, we've got 100 people watching right now. Drop into the comments your top moments from this season. But what would you rank in there just off the dome?
Well, it was such a fun season overall. And what made it fun to me was all the little storylines each week, not just the wins, but everything that went into it. It seemed like each week was not necessarily the Super Bowl, but it felt like Tennessee and Tennessee fans, like we made every game so huge and so much fun. So really, and it feels like it was a year ago now, beating Florida. I mean, that was huge, jumping out to a big win, seeing Josh Heupel celebrate that win. That was the first, like, okay, Heupel has passed the first major test, because 2021 is kind of the honeymoon phase. He exceeded some expectations, lost some games, wasn't competitive in a couple of games that we felt like he could have been, or maybe wished he would have been. But it's like, okay, now 2022, you got to beat Florida. You've got to win that game in Knoxville. You're better. And they did. So that was huge. That was one of my favorite moments. The Kentucky game. I mean, that whole week of all the trash talk going back and forth, all this stuff coming out of Kentucky that their offensive coordinator was saying, that Will Levis was saying, all the hype, and then primetime game with Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit on the call. Regardless of what you think of them, that's the big game of the day, whatever game they're doing. The energy at Neyland that night was insane. That was a fun one. When DeNico Slaughter hit the Kentucky receiver and Juwan Mitchell made that interception and Neyland just erupted, that was probably one of my favorite moments. And then by far, I think the best moment was the celebration, the Alabama game, of course. Dixieland Delight playing, seeing Jalen Hyatt jumping up and down in a sea of orange, Josh Heupel with the box of cigars as he's being interviewed after the game. Obviously, all the tremendous content and videos that came out from that fans took, goalposts going into the river. That was the, like, outside of 1998, I mean, that's the best moment that I've seen cheering for Tennessee. Like, I can't think of any moment that was better. Now, you know, I'm mid-30s, so there are some moments that I didn't get to experience long ago, but for me, that's about as good as it gets.
There was a countless number after that Alabama win. The kick itself, the celebration afterwards, the Dixieland Delight, the cigar box for Heupel, the goalpost coming down, the goalpost going in the river, the goalpost traveling down the strip. The
goalpost showed up on Google Maps.
Yes, everything about that. And then every team on planet Earth then attempting to recreate that when they had a big win this season. South Carolina after they beat Tennessee. Then South Carolina after they beat Clemson, pulling out cigars and copying Tennessee, which is an absolute
Spencer Rattler trying to be Joe Burrow was... I didn't tweet about it because I feel like I can't after what Spencer Rattler did to Tennessee. Like, I'm not going to go out and disparage him on Twitter because that's just an invitation for South Carolina fans to flood my mentions like Georgia exactly. fans seem to do. But that was... It was not genuine at all.
I'm glad that they beat Clemson. It was fun to watch, but I really don't like we're now just supposed to forget that he stunk for 10 games and then he played two good ones. And that was great. And then all of a sudden, yeah, he's making a video like he's Joe Burrow. Like, come on. This is why people don't like this kid, you know?
And he didn't play great against Clemson.
No, he didn't. Through a pick six, through an interception at the 1 yard line, you know, it's and let me tell you how ill I was when I tuned into that game. He throws that pick six and I was like, of course, this kid's going to throw for a billion yards against Tennessee and lay the biggest stinker of the century against Clemson. He didn't. They ended up winning the game, but I was just like, of course they would do this. This is Tennessee in a nutshell.
It served Dabo right after talking crap about Tennessee all week.
Yeah. And of course, that's what we want to see. Man, that Orange Bowl. What the question almost is now, with the rankings having not come out yet, is like, do you want to rank above Alabama and get that satisfaction, or do you want to rank below them and get to play Clemson? That's sort of the dichotomy that we have to choose between. I kind of lean Clemson. I'll take the being ranked below Alabama as much BS.
Plus, the Orange Bowl is a primetime game. Sugar Bowl is 11 a.m. Local time in New Orleans this year.
Yeah, the Orange Bowl just seems odd, and I kind of want to go to Miami. It's a fun place to go. But like, there were just so many, like Boomhauer, he says, taking over Tiger Stadium, the fans traveling there and Tennessee blowing them out. And then just all of the Tennessee fans consolidating down to the lower part of that bowl and celebrating after the game and all of that. I mean, it was a Tennessee home game in Tiger Stadium, one of the toughest environments in all of college football.
If I had to mention my favorite play, like my favorite play from the entire season, it would be Hendon Hooker's pass in Baton Rouge to Jalen Hyatt,
ooh,
where I think we all thought that he overthrew Hyatt at first, and Hyatt was so fast that he catches it in stride, and then he go. I mean, it's just a sea of orange in the back of the end zone there, celebrating in what is supposed to be a purple and yellow stadium. That was probably my favorite play the whole year.
That one was incredible, and that's the one that you've seen in the compilation.
Mm-hmm.
Compilations for Hendon Hooker. It's like one of the main ones that they show every single time. That was so good. Like, we almost forget Tennessee beat LSU by 30 in Baton Rouge. Like,
everybody forgets that because they want to bring up losing the 25 at South Carolina, but LSU getting boat raced at home seemed to have been forgotten by a lot of people.
This is why every single, I mean, it's not worth arguing this on Twitter because people are just going to believe what they want to believe. But like, I think in that situation, if Tennessee loses that South Carolina game in between the Florida game and the LSU game, and everything else works out the exact same, and like Hendon Hooker maybe gets injured in the Vanderbilt game and his season is over at that point, no one argues for one second that Tennessee is ahead of Alabama. There wouldn't be an argument at all if that game happened in week 4 instead of week 11. I don't think that anyone would have thought twice about it, because LSU lost to Florida State, and LSU lost by 30 to Tennessee, and all of these things, and people were like, oh, no, they're number 5. They're ahead of, yeah, yeah. No, they lost by 30 to Tennessee, and Tennessee's behind them. That's not, you can't talk out of both sides of your mouth there. That's why that's so stupid. That's why the whole argument of, well, Alabama only lost to Tennessee by 3. They lost to Tennessee. That's the difference. There's, the end of that sentence is, well, Alabama only lost to Tennessee. And then that's the end. That's the argument there. That's all you need to know. But in terms of other great moments from this season, yeah, that hit against Kentucky was so awesome. The call by Chris Fowler. Mm-hmm. I know Tennessee fans don't like him. I'm in that same boat, and screw Kirk Herbstreit, especially after this week. But his call of that play, Fowler's call of that play, was excellent and in an awesome spot in an incredible environment in Neyland Stadium. And you're just beating Kentucky's head in after they really thought they were going to come in and beat you. That one was excellent. And just some other ones like, to me, this one is understated, and it may just be like to me, but the first half of the Alabama game where Tennessee got up by 18. Yeah, Alabama came back and ended up, you only won by 3. But I think in that moment, you had just come off beating LSU by 30. But in that moment, I went, this is real. Like, Tennessee can beat Alabama. Like, it was that moment. It almost like turned my stomach because it made me really nervous. Yep. Where I was like, oh my gosh, Tennessee could really do this. Like, that was a huge moment in this season.
Because after beating LSU, we said, hey, you're playing with house money.
Exactly. You. It didn't matter what you went out there and did. You're expected to lose to Alabama. You were a 10-point underdog in your own stadium in an unbelievable environment. And they get up by 18 points and you go, oh my gosh, we can beat Alabama. And that moment, because it was 15 years in the making of being like in 2015, Butch had Bam on the ropes. He had a lead with what, like 3 minutes left in the game or something, but you went, this is so lucky. Like,
yeah,
they're going to go down, they're going to score, and they're still going to win. But hey, we had a lead with 3 minutes left in this game. That was cool. Like, you didn't watch that game and go like, man, Tennessee is back. They're here. They're going to do, you know?
Yeah. The last time they played Alabama, that I thought that it was 2009. I mean, that was the last time that felt like they were on the same playing field. And that was before Alabama had a great team that year, obviously, but they still weren't Alabama that we know now. They weren't that same team yet. So there hasn't been many times where you felt that feeling against Alabama where you're like, oh, it's possible. You know, we felt it for a little bit last year in 2021, because that game was close going into the third quarter, and then Tennessee just kind of ran out of gas. But and that's what I was worried about this year. And I think that's what you're talking about, that nervous feeling. I got that same thing. It's like, okay, Tennessee can do this, but are they going to do it?
Yeah,
are they going to blow this or not?
It suddenly became, all right, this is possible. Now we got to pull it off. You know, and that it was a big, fun moment too. I like Paul here. Another sort of understated moment. Joe Milton, send the brick into the clouds to the 2-yard line and busting 60 for my birthday. I love in anything like that where we like it didn't lead to giant wins, but yeah, like that throw from Joe Milton to Squirrel White. Did we decide, was it actually a 67-yard throw?
Well,
I counted 61 when I looked at it, but my math might be wrong.
Somebody broke out the Pythagorean theorem because, you know, it's across the field, right? Because he's on the opposite hash and kind of throwing it. So I guess
that's really true.
Traveled in the air. Yeah, it probably was about 67 yards.
Yes. But like that one, did it lead to some miraculous winner? And you think, no, it was in garbage time, but it was incredible. And then, even in this Vandy game, the giant throw to Jalen Hyatt was incredible. And it was on that first drive, and you were sticking it to Vandy right out of the gate. Like, that's a great moment from this season. Yes, I think all of us are going to agree the Bama win is the number one moment from this regular season. And then, yeah, maybe like Florida or whatever, like you can work it back from there. But I love those small moments too. There was a lot.
You know, another great one was when Alabama, the kick returner fumbled, or it was the punt returner, and he muffed the punt. And Nick Saban just lost his mind on the sideline. And in that moment, you were kind of like, yeah, Tennessee's got the upper hand here. Tennessee's in control. It's what we talked about a lot early in the season, and it's what Tennessee got away from in Georgia and South Carolina, is they were dictating the way the game was played, and they were controlling the game. And in that moment when Nick Saban was just losing his mind because his player was the one that was making the mistake to give the other team the chance to kind of go up and take control of the game. That was a fun moment. It wasn't necessarily a changing of the guard moment, because I think Nick Saban is still Nick Saban and is still going to do some Nick Saban things, but it did show some, you know, he can be beaten, and Josh Heupel proved that. And that moment was kind of symbolic of that for me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, it was full of great moments. The whole season, the Pitt game feels like so long ago, the way the defense kind of stepped up there at the end to clinch that game. And even the throw to Cedric Tillman in the end zone. I was listening to Dave Hooker does a weekly interview with Jacob Warren, the tight end for Tennessee, and I was listening to that last night. And he said that was the moment where he realized, like, hey, this team can do what we want to do. Not that Pitt was some great team, but they were a good team. They have a good defense. It's on the road. Those are games that Tennessee hasn't won. I mean, they lost to Pitt last year at home. We've seen them lose those games so many times. And that, obviously, that I think that was in their heads to some extent. Like, Josh Heupel talked about they never put limits on what they can do, but they still needed a win like that to believe that they could do it. And I think that win really is what gave them confidence for the entire season moving on from there. So I think that was a huge moment to go up there and win that game in overtime. And it, like Jada Warren said during the interview, nothing that Tennessee's offense did in that game went to plan. Like, Pittsburgh disrupted their plan. And they had to fight and claw their way into that game and to get that win. And it showed that, hey, they, even when things go awry, they can still win those types of games. So I think that was a great moment too. Again, it feels like so long ago because so much has happened this season, but that was certainly a fun one.
It's weird to think this isn't a good moment per se, but it's a moment that ended up leading to great things. The Akron game, Tillman goes out. Obviously not good. That injury has been terrible and it's plagued him all season, all the way up till now. But that led to the unbelievable emergence of Jalen Hyatt. That doesn't happen unless that injury occurs. Jalen Hyatt doesn't get that opportunity to essentially be wide receiver number one and become that dude and score five touchdowns against Alabama. And you kind of look and you go, even in the bad moments, because we were I'm still mad about that Akron game because it ruined Cedric Tillman's entire season. But even in the bad moments, it ended up being a blessing of sorts because it allowed the emergence of Jalen Hyatt. As crazy
And Ramel Keaton.
And Ramel Keaton. Yeah, that's
speaking true. Of another moment, that diving catch in the Florida game. I mean, one of the best catches you'll see, right? I mean, you don't see a lot of those laying out and actually catching the ball, securing it, not letting it hit the ground. It was in a key part of the game as well, where they really needed that catch and those yards. That was another fantastic moment. And I'm thinking about that Florida game, Jalen Wright doing the gator chomp in the back of the end zone.
Oh, yeah.
That's one that'll stay with me for a while.
So many. And I love Heupel after that game. He kind of did a similar thing after Alabama, and that, you know, a lot of fans probably consider that better. But the first moment in this season that was really special, he wins that Florida game. And the CBS reporter goes up and goes like, "How do you feel right now?" And he goes like, "How great is this?" You know, and just talking about the environment and Neyland, and that it sort of sends chills down your spine. Like, it's just such,
especially when you said, you know, Rocky Top's back, and he got a lot of blowback from opposing fans. They're like, "Well, you're going to lose to LSU, you're going to lose to Alabama, it's Florida, they're down," you know. And then he goes out and he makes it, you know, the South Carolina loss being what it is, that he's got some equity built from these wins against LSU and Alabama that people just weren't expecting him to go and do what they did. And another great moment, not to go through every single thing of the season, but Henry Toto'o the night before the Alabama game with the hype video that was dropped, and when he says it's not personal, it's just business, and he straightens the tie. And then I can't remember who it was in that Tennessee game, or in the Alabama-Tennessee game, that scored a touchdown and did. I didn't even realize it at the time. He's straightening his tie like Henry Toto'o did in that video. Yeah. And then you heard after the game players making comments about, it's not personal, it's just business. I remember Princeton Fant specifically.
Princeton Fant made the video.
Yeah. It feels like some of Josh Heupel's pettiness kind of went to the team in that sense, which I love. I mean, I love that so much.
Yes.
It is that whole Michael Jordan taking it personally thing we've talked about before. That's what you have to do to be great. Who cares? I mean, Nick Saban said it himself this year. You have to make it personal. And it felt like Tennessee did almost every week.
Man, there's so many. Yeah, I had forgotten about Toto'o and that whole thing. Alabama just, it was a
he never won a game. He never won a game in the Alabama-Tennessee series in Neyland. I mean,
that's true.
He was at Tennessee in 2020 and lost, and at Alabama in 2022.
Man, that's so great. Well, I think that's it. Anything else, Zach, for the good folks at home before we bounce out of here? I'll remind everybody again, as everybody is watching, myself, Zach, Austin Stanley, creator of A to Z Sports, but also a big Tennessee fan who was at, he was at the Vandy game even. He's going to come on with us on Wednesday. And we'll post it then. So just watch the YouTube channel on Wednesday, and we're going to
talking about that real quick. I don't think we're all going to be in total agreement on that. There might be some dissenting opinions. So it should be a good fun conversation to have.
Yes, because we've already in texts and stuff we have disagreed. yes, but he's going to come on with us after the college football rankings come out on Tuesday, and we're going to talk about where Tennessee's at and where they sort of project going forward. And maybe it's the Orange Bowl of Clemson. Maybe it's the Sugar Bowl of Kansas State. Maybe it's something else. But we're going to talk about all of that with Austin Stanley. So keep a lookout for that on the A to Z Sports Nashville YouTube channel. But Zach, anything else for the good folks at home before we bounce?
I think some people jumped in here. Might have missed a conversation we had about Joe Milton and the quarterback situation. I'm going to go back and watch that after this is over. We talked about that a decent amount as far as what would be best for Tennessee to do if Joe Milton can be the guy. Taven Jackson, Nico, transfer. There's several options there that we went over.
Yeah, maybe I'll pull that out. There was a bunch of stuff in this episode that I could pull out as a separate clip and post on the YouTube channel, which I like to do. It seems like a lot of people watch the show that way. They watch it in the segments instead of watching the entire like hour and a half thing.
I mean, all of our attention spans are that way, right? I mean, it's hard for me, right?
As long as you watch the show in some form, I'm all for it. I'm Charlie Burris. That is Zach Reagan. We thank all of y'all for listening to the show every week. It has been, what an unbelievable season it's been. Seriously, we're going to do a bunch of stuff for the bowl game. Me, Jonathan Crompton, and of course, Zach, too, with this podcast. We're going to do it up right for the bowl game, whatever it may end up being. And so stay tuned here. Rate, review, subscribe, like buttons, notification bells. You know what to do. I mean, you're watching us here. Come back for everything that we do throughout the week. And I think that's going to be it. Let me get I have the music actually set up for the end of the show.
Now, yeah, go back and watch the intro if you want to see something fun, I guess, special.
See me unprepared to do the job that A to Z pays me to do.
Trying to be a little more tactful, but okay.
Charlie Burris, Zach Reagan, thank you to everybody for watching, and we will talk to y'all on Wednesday.
See you guys then. Go out and get yourself.